It is Maryland Morning on 881 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. There are 8 congressional districts in Maryland that are in play in the primary next month, and a couple of them feature very crowded races. Congresswoman Donna Edwards is relinquishing her seat in the 4th District, which includes parts of Anne Arundel and Prince George's County, to run for the U.S. Senate. 6 Democrats are vying to be the nominee to succeed her in Congress in the general election later this year, including a state delegate and a former candidate for governor. Congressman Chris Van Hollen is also giving up his seat to run against Donna Edwards for the Senate. He is the current incumbent in District 8 in Montgomery County, one of the country's wealthiest congressional districts. The 9 Democrats in that race to succeed Van Hollen are locked in one of the most expensive congressional races in history. So let's take a look at these and other races with two guys who follow Maryland politics very closely. John Fritzy is the Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us on the phone from Washington. Todd Eberle is the chair and professor of political science at St. Mary's College and the proprietor of the Free Stater blog. He's on the line this morning from the campus of St. Mary's College. Welcome to you both, gentlemen.
Morning.
So, John, let's start with you. Before we talk about these very contested open seats in the 4th and the 8th District, let's go over a few of the other incumbents and see where they stand. In District 1, Andy Harris has 3 challengers in the primary. Does anyone expect that he's going to have any trouble securing the nomination?
Probably not. You know, in a district like the 1st, which is pretty solidly Republican, there's always a danger of someone coming in and mounting a conservative challenge. But Andy Harris has done a pretty decent job, I think, of protecting his right flank and making sure that there's not a lot of room. I think, in any time you've got an incumbent, I think there's a very high hurdle for a challenger to clear.
Sure. In District 2, Todd Eberle, Dutch Ruppersberger is unopposed in the primary. District 3, John Sarbanes has 1 Democratic opponent in the primary, but I assume most folks are thinking that Mr. Sarbanes' seat is fairly secure as well.
Yeah, I think most of the incumbents are quite safe in Maryland's congressional districts this round.
Yes, Denny Hoyer, he's raised $1.7 million. He's, of course, the House Minority Whip. He doesn't really have much competition. He's got a couple of folks running in the primary. They're not expected to do well. And John Delaney, who ousted Roscoe Bartlett last time around, he also has only 1 candidate. So nobody's worried about them. Nobody seems to be worried about Elijah Cummings. He's facing 1 candidate in the primary. Is this the common wisdom is that people hate Congress, but they love their congressman or congresswoman. Todd, is this playing out exactly that way here in Maryland?
Well, you see that a little bit, although of late people tend to hate Congress and dislike their own congressperson as well. The system is sort of designed to stack the deck in favor of incumbents, and you see that play out in Maryland and many other states. So in many respects, the lack of any real challenges just speaks to the way in which the parties have sort of ensured that their incumbents are as safe as possible during each election cycle. I think there are only about 85 competitive seats nationwide out of 435 seats in Congress.
Mm-hmm. So let's move to District 4, Donna Edwards' current seat. John Fritzy, we've got Anthony Brown, the former lieutenant governor and former candidate for governor who lost to Larry Hogan in 2012. We've got a retired Army officer and Iraq war veteran who ran in 2014, Warren Christopher. We've got Glenn Ivey, the former Prince George's County state's attorney, who also ran in 2012. And then a woman named Joseline Pena Melnick. She's a state delegate from College Park. She's been endorsed by the Washington Post. Terrence Strait is a federal employee and a psychologist. And Alvin Thornton is a college professor and a former congressional aide. Of that crowd there, I guess Anthony Brown perhaps has the most statewide recognition, but is that going to do him much good in the 4th District? What's your read on that race?
Well, I think that's the right question. I think just adding to what Todd was saying, because the deck is stacked against incumbents, that's why it's so interesting that we have 2 open congressional seats this year. It just doesn't happen that often. There's not a huge amount of turnover in Maryland. So the fact that we have these 2 congresspeople who are running for Senate, makes these 2 open races really interesting, because we're going to have 2 new congresspeople. come January. So the fourth, I think you're right. What Brown has benefited from throughout this entire campaign is name recognition, right? He's a former state lawmaker from Prince George's County. He ran twice on the O'Malley ticket statewide, so a lot of people know who he is. He has a high name ID. You know, if you look at even the internal polls of some of his opposing candidates, he tends to have a slight lead. So I think, you know, many people sort of view him as the guy to beat. On the other hand, there has been sort of an energy issue with that campaign, I think, all along. They didn't do a lot of fundraising. Peña Melnick has actually outraced him, depending on how you look at the numbers, and certainly has outworked him, I think, in terms of things we see in public. The Brown campaign will argue very strongly that the former lieutenant governor has been out knocking on doors this whole time, and I've actually been out with him a few times. I mean, I know he's doing it. You know, I think that race probably comes down to Brown, Peña Melnick, and Ivey. Those are the three that are probably the best known and raising the most money.
And Todd Eberle, Anthony Brown let down an awful lot of Democrats when he lost an election to Larry Hogan in a state that is, you know, virtually 2-1 Democrat to Republican in terms of voters. How is that going to affect his chances in the fourth?
Well, I think if he had approached this campaign differently, maybe it would suggest to people that he had learned some lessons. But there's quite a lot of grumbling that they're seeing echoes of his gubernatorial race in this congressional race. Not a lot of energy, not a lot of sort of out there raising money. And this assumption that his name recognition, the advantages that he has in Prince George's County will be enough to push him over the top. And his campaign for governor certainly made those same assumptions, and he came up about 4 percentage points short. And when you look at, as had just been mentioned, the fundraising numbers for Peña Melnick and for Ivey, they are raising a tremendous amount of money against someone who was just sort of assumed to be the favorite in this race.
Yeah, Glenn Ivey actually leads them all. Last report, he had about almost $720,000. Peña Melnick at about $510,000. Derek Davis, another candidate, at $464,000. That's $10,000 more than Anthony Brown reported. So he's fourth in the fundraising part of it. Is the fact that Mr. Ivey has a bit more, you know, a couple hundred thousand more than Peña Melnick, does that bode well for his, you know, making a strong last stand in these last few weeks? Todd, what do you think?
It certainly can. I mean, you need that money, especially on election day, to drive your turnout machine. I think in many respects that matters more these days than even advertising. So to have that cash advantage in the final days will probably help him quite a bit. We all recall that in the gubernatorial race that Anthony Brown had to take a loan in the waning days of that campaign to have some money at the very end. And, of course, it didn't turn out to be enough.
Todd Eberle is on the faculty of St. Mary's College. He joins us from the college. John Fritzi is the Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. He's on the phone with us. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, John, you've been on the campaign trail with former Lieutenant Governor Brown. Do you agree with this assessment that so many people seem to have, that he's just a low-energy guy and he's just not creating the kind of excitement he needs to create?
Well, I'm not sure I would have cast a low energy.
That sounds kind of Trumpian, doesn't it?
I don't want to do that, but I will say a couple of things. I agree with Todd for the most part. I would say two things working for Brown's advantage that don't get talked about a lot. One is, of course, it's a little bit problematic to compare. Although I've done it too, it's a little bit problematic to compare the statewide general to a primary in a congressional district, right? And it's worth noting that Anthony Brown, you know, won the primary pretty handily, and so I think, you know, it's worth noting that while he did have this big problem, this big failure in 2014, he also won the primary. So he still does okay with Democratic voters. The other thing to keep in mind is that we had a candidate in that race, a guy named Derek Davis, who was the powerful committee chairman in Annapolis and was raising actually a decent amount of money. A lot of people feel like and he dropped out of the race just before the filing deadline. A lot of people feel like his donors were Brown's donors, that there was a crossover there. So it's possible that Brown will benefit from Davis getting out of the race. And I think, you know, it's also important to keep in mind that we haven't seen the most recent campaign finance numbers and won't for a little while. The last numbers we saw were as of the end of last year.
But it is kind of interesting that, you know, he still trails in fundraising to a guy who dropped out of the race. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Well, let's move over to District 8, the seat that Chris Van Hollen is vacating while he runs for the Senate seat that's currently held by Barbara Mikulski. This is a very competitive affair and a very expensive affair. Kathleen Matthews, she's married to the MSNBC host Chris Matthews. She has been endorsed by the Washington Post. Jamie Raskin, who's the state Senate majority whip, the Washington Post spoke very highly of him in their endorsement of Ms. Matthews, but concluded that he was perhaps too much to the left for most Marylanders. We've got David Trone, who owns a chain of wine and liquor stores. He's self-funding his campaign, kind of redolent of John Delaney's bid to unseat Roscoe Bartlett last time around. Todd Eberle, who do you think has the advantage going in to these last 5 weeks?
Well, I think Raskin has a slight advantage. And it's interesting, this argument about someone being too much to the left or too liberal. I mean, it's important to remember that when the Maryland congressional districts were redrawn, the 8th district was made less Democratic in order to make the 6th district more Democratic. So it went from being about a 75-25 Democratic district in elections to, in the last midterm, a 60-40 district. So that argument may actually work to the advantage of a Matthews or a Trone, but I still think that Raskin has the advantage here.
And John Fritzy, what do you think?
It's such a great race. I think it's really reflective of some of the things happening nationally in the party. You've got two outsiders, insofar as they were not elected, and Kathleen Matthews and David Trone mounting really interesting campaigns. David Trone is spending just an inordinate amount of money. You cannot turn on radio or television down here in Washington without seeing a David Trone ad, and certainly Matthews as well is spending a good deal of cash. I think Trone, you mentioned John Delaney. It's a really interesting comparison. It's worth pointing out that while Delaney did put a lot of his own money into the race, he also raised a lot of money. You know, he went out and he raised millions of dollars from donors, and I do think that's an important thing for candidates to do, not just for having the money in their pocket, but also because it builds a network, it puts them in touch with people, and I think candidates maybe act a little differently when they're spending other people's money as well as their own. So I think there's value in that. I agree with Todd. I think it probably comes down to Trone, Raskin, and Matthews. And, I think beyond that, it's really hard to predict. There's been no public polling in either of these races. And a lot of it may, frankly, depend on turnout. What happens at the presidential level, I think, could really affect both of these races as well.
And Todd Eberle, there's some estimates that Mr. Trone will spend north of $10 million of his own money on this race. As we saw in the presidential primaries, at least on the Republican side, candidates like Jeb Bush, who seemed to have an awful lot of money, didn't make an awful lot of impact. Do you think any of that is going to play out here in the local level? I mean, the Post actually had a story about how very few self-funded campaigns have actually succeeded, going back to Ross Perot et al. How do you think the influence of money is going to play in the 8th District here in Maryland?
Well, we are seeing more in the political science literature anyway, that money spent on advertising, which is where so much of this money goes, does not have the impact that it used to have. In the age of DVRs and Netflix, people can very easily avoid campaign ads. So these folks that self-fund and flood the airwaves with television ads, they're not getting the advantage that they would have gotten, say, 20 years ago. And the other difference, of course, for Trone versus Delaney, was running very much against the system. There was a sense that district had been redrawn specifically to benefit a particular candidate. And a lot of people really were upset with that sense that the Maryland establishment was trying to protect its own. And that's really not a similar vibe in this race in the 8th District.
And we will have both of you back to talk about this whole notion of districting and redistricting and gerrymandering, which is, of course, remaining, as always, a very important issue for the body politic in general. But I appreciate your time this morning to both of you. Thanks so much. And we'll see you out there on the trail. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Fritzy is the Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. Todd Eberle is on the faculty of St. Mary's College, where he chairs the political science department. We've got links to John's articles in the Sun and to Todd's blog, Free Stater, come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up a little later here on the program, the BSO plays host to an indie band and some boom bappers. I'll talk to the conductor who oversees this eclectic musical mashup. But first, it's time now for our weekly feature, The Environment in Focus.